numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network. Visa.com, the Visa app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander, Jeffrey Parlay. Once upon a time, producer number 5 and 8, the Grover Cleveland of producers, kind enough to hang out in place of Kelly Bidlin. Kelly will be back on Thursday. Jeffrey, was like riding a bike? Is it like old time?
Easy enough.
Yeah. So we have Steve Fezzik coming in studio later this hour. We'll talk to JVT about the NBA. Lots of soap opera-y NBA stuff to talk about. Soap opera-y. And our NFL power rankings we're going to do. Which, again, the most static of all seasons when it comes to NFL power rankings. And again, college football begins in less than an hour. Quartet of games today, beginning with that Georgia Southern game, which the entire world is on, Georgia Southern. We'll get PFUTAC's thoughts on this in a moment. But we get tweets, and boy, when we talk Survivor, we get a whole bunch of tweets. Mark Geiger, in-house attorney for a numbers game, regarding the Chop It Up, will Circa reach out to the three to see if there's interest? Would not recommend providing ID info without consent of the players. The answer to that is no. Circa will not initiate contact. They will have to be contacted first by the players, and they will have to get consent from the other, that kind of thing. But Circa will not, as far as I understand, will not initiate that. Mike Rouse. Also, don't forget that starting in 2023, Monday night football games can be flexed from weeks 14 to 18. This could affect Christmas week games as well. Michael Byrne, same thing. Next year, the league can flex Monday games. That might be an issue as well when putting in your picks. To my point about respectfully suggesting to Circa that after what we witnessed here this year and the predicament that that gentleman was put in, predicament being a strong word, but you understand the pickle he was in, that perhaps there's a more humane way to go about this. Because imagine being that dude. Whew. Let's see. This is from It's Not Juice If You Win. He says, can't they each take $1 million, then play for the remaining $3 million and work with Circa on it, get a formula agreement in place? Again, this is what we're talking about, which is you don't know these people. You know, you can come to some kind of agreement, but then you got to be together to like see that it actually gets on an app. Literally here, I'm making the pick. See, I'm making the pick that we agreed on kind of thing. And Circa, for, you know, I can't speak on behalf. I certainly can't purport to speak for Derek Stevens, Mike Palm, Jeffrey Benson, Matthew Metcalf, the whole staff over there. They probably want to stay as far away from all of those machinations as possible, I would think, in general. Maris Sullivan, your Christmas Eve hedge challenge is understood, but the time to get your strategy in order was over the past week or two. Maris, I made this point yesterday, which is this person could not have expected to have been in this situation realistically. Yes, if you're going through every possible situation, okay. But basically a four-team parlay had to hit. The three other people in the morning had to lose, and his had to hit. By the way, how that went down with the 61-yard field goal and the way the other teams lost, I was like, so I get it. Your point is well taken, but he couldn't have realistically expected it. It wasn't a high probability. But you're right. Maybe if he had everything together, he would have done that. But I'm not sure I would have anticipated that either. Indiana Jet, the best way to chop would be to have all three contestants not put in a pick at all, but how do you trust that they'll go through with it? Exactly my point. Get proxies involved. Could someone like Mike Palm get involved to make sure no one enters a pick at the last minute? Yeah, I don't think they want to do that. Phil Weiss, thank you for finally voicing that, Gil. It's total luck, as I said, when you were busy crowning DeLuca. All right, we weren't busy crowning DeLuca. He was just the last guy with six left. We were curious about his thought process. And if you remember, I was like, oh my, what he was doing. So we were doing the opposite, actually. We weren't doing the opposite, but we're just hearing him out. Because one point, though, I have two friends who are professional poker players, and they keep a huge amount of cash on hand for a situation like this. Well, if you were listening, I brought that up with Matt Brown. If you have a bunch of poker-playing buddies, which, again, 0.00 whatever percent of the population does, yes, that would have been an option. Anyway, so many of these, and we'll get to all of them by the end of the show, but we want to get Pete Futak in here. How you doing, Peter, from College Football News, joins us right now.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm extremely intrigued about all this. Basically, all that stuff is kind of fun. And man, the NFL this weekend, the rough beat to try to deal with. But I'm doing all right. How are you doing? Happy holidays.
We're doing very well. You too. Happy holidays. Glad to see the Guy Fieri poster is behind you as well, even though you're covering up.
Kid's still here from college. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so. Kid is still here. Okay, let's just go through these one by one. Let's go through one by one today, starting with the Georgia Southern Buffalo game, the Camellia Bowl here. What do you got? Georgia Southern now up to a 5.5-point favorite.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the problem with all this in this bowl season's a disaster because you're still trying to figure out who's playing, who's not. And even if you do have teams that pretty much are representative, you get Matt McDonald, the Bowling Green quarterback, getting knocked out right away yesterday. And all of a sudden, Diego Pavia, who's the New Mexico State quarterback, who wasn't supposed to be dinged up, all of a sudden becomes Steve Young. So, like, these things have gone crazy. But with that said, yeah, Georgia Southern, even if everything was equal, should beat Buffalo by more than a touchdown. They've just got more talent, more firepower. Buffalo is way too shaky. And then Buffalo's very, very thin in its offensive backfield. Even though the world's on it, keep going with Georgia Southern at 5.5.
Yeah, I'm on Georgia Southern myself. How about Memphis, Utah State? Now, I haven't heard as many opinions on this one. The First Responder Bowl, if you will, that comes right after that, 12:15 Pacific, 3:15 Eastern. Memphis again, favored by 7 here, total 58.5.
Problem is Memphis has been way underwhelming all year. They just haven't been able to put away bad teams easily. But I'm going to stick with my theory and belief, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Go with the teams that have the most starters returning. Utah State's missing a ton in the transfer portal, at least through the depth and through all the other parts. They came back big late in the second half of the season. Sweat it out a little bit, but go with the favorite Memphis. They have more of their main parts back.
Birmingham Bowl, East Carolina now down to a 7-point favorite against Coastal.
I'm missing something here. I don't know why that's going down. On East Carolina, it's something crazy. Like, this could be their first bowl win since like 2002-ish or something like that. Coastal Carolina gets Grayson McCall back, but he's kind of been out and about doing, figuring out his transfer portal world and where he's going. They're missing their head coach. And Coastal Carolina, as is coming into this limping after getting destroyed in its last two games. East Carolina, to me, comes out and just blows up this Coastal Carolina defense. Coastal Carolina big in this one.
All right, tonight we're talking about the Wisconsin-Oklahoma State game. Wisconsin starting freshman quarterback now. It's down to 3.5 here. What's going on here?
Yeah. All right, first of all, again, Georgia Southern I like. Memphis I kind of like. East Carolina I really like. You know when I say this, stay as far away at whatever this guaranteed great bowl is possible, because we have no freaking idea, because Oklahoma State's missing Spencer Sanders. It was a disaster of a team late in the year. It's missing so many players. Wisconsin is missing just as many big players, except Wisconsin is supposed to have Braylon Allen back. At the very least, they have Ches Malusi back, and their offensive line is going to be good enough. Jim Leonard's still around. So there's so many weird variables in this. I'm taking, if I have to, give me Wisconsin and I'll give away the points just because their running game should be able to work. But Mike Gundy is great in bowl games. So again, stay far, far away. I would go under, and Wisconsin to cover.
You say I'd stay far away. You keep making bets. I think your advice
if you're going
to
do
No. They don't have to. Trust me. There's no one has to do this. I think you're right. Of all the bowl games, and Lord knows, I've said this, and then by the time a game starts, I'm making a bet. But this is one I can promise you I will not have a bet on. Oklahoma State, Wisconsin.
Well, you always make the claim of watch the first half and go from there.
But even this one, I don't know that I would do that either.
I would. Some of these are going to be kind of representative where you can kind of see are the missing parts on the other side too much to overcome, especially on the lines. And if Wisconsin's offensive line comes out and steamrolls right away and they end up only having to throw 8 passes, you can kind of figure this one out.
That's
potentially.
True. That's true. In game or nothing. Let's just put it that way. All right. What about tomorrow? Another 4 games. What's your favorite among them, betting wise?
I like Duke. I mean, even Duke's been, if you took all the stats and everything Duke did this year and said that's what Miami was doing, everyone would be gushing over Miami. Oh my God, the Canes are back. I mean, because Duke, out of their 4 losses, 3 of them were by 3 points and one of them was by 8, and they destroyed Miami and they were pretty good all the way around. UCF, again, Is John Rhys Plumlee 100%? Even if he is playing, no. They're missing a lot of parts. And Duke is about as intact as any Power 5 team is in this whole thing. They basically get everybody back. I liked, even if everything was equal, I would kind of like Duke in this. They're only giving away, what, 3.5? That jumped up a little bit, but if you can get it at 3, go for it. But it doesn't matter. I think Duke wins this by a touchdown.
All right, then 30 seconds for these last two questions, 30 seconds for each. One, favorite bet between tomorrow and the semifinals is?
Minnesota, again, representative. They get Mo Ibrahim back, their star running back. They got their offensive line intact. Syracuse was already decimated defensively. I hate giving away double-digit points in a bowl game because we're really just sort of throwing things at a wall here. But Minnesota, I see them doing what they did to West Virginia last season when they won 18-6. They are just going to grind. They're going to have the ball for an hour and a half. And again, they're pretty representative because their running game should destroy whatever it is happening on the Syracuse side.
All right, and then New Year's Eve, the semis, what's your best? Well, give me your thoughts on both real quick.
Michigan. Go, real quick, I like Ohio State to keep it close against Georgia and Michigan to obliterate really, really fast here. There's only been one of the undercard games in the eight of the college football playoff that has been closer than 17 points. I think Michigan comes out. It's first half, like TCU, second half, love Michigan, and love Michigan to cover.
Yeah, I would have laid minus a bajillion on Futak going Michigan there.
Yeah.
Certainly. Power 5 snob, but then also a tiered snobbery.
TCU's a Power 5. That's a big, they're just at the adult
And then
table.
Also a tiered snobbery once you get to the Power 5, if I can finish the thought.
I can't make Michigan worse at this game. I want this game to be close.
Thank you, Peter. Great seeing you. At Pete Futak, F-I-U-T-A-K on Twitter from College Football News. Our NFL Power Rankings, more Survivor Talk. On the other side, Numbers Game VEASAN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game, proudly brought to you by BetMGM Nevada, the king of sportsbooks. Gil Alexander, Jeffrey Parlay in for the vacationing Kelly Bidlin. Don't forget about our betting splits page, always available to you. Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 10 minutes so you can see changes in all the action and find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits! Yet another way that VSiN is here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. Jeffrey Parlay, not one to scream in the background, splitting bets. Just not one to do so.
Kelly's thing.
We had Wyatt do it the other day. Wyatt was getting praise from downstairs about his performance. I found it lackluster. I did.
That's fine.
I didn't think he really put his heart into it. Wyatt will be back with us tomorrow. Wyatt did a great job, though. All right, we're getting a bunch of Survivor tweets as well. I won't continue to read them, but all over the place. Most people in agreement. Some people still I would disagree with. This is from, let me see what I got here. Oh, there's more. There's more and more. Let's see here. Trip Tepper, Survivor comment / scenario. If all three could get in a room at Circa and agree to all take the Texans this week, they mutually agree to tank, quote-unquote, and manufacture a chop by taking a loser, a utopian scenario, of course. Yeah, I mean, any way you slice it, it involves getting in a room. Because otherwise, come on, what are we doing? But yes, I still think the two macro points remain, and I'll just repeat this one more time. I think Circa really ought to reconsider the Christmas quick weekend turnaround thing based on what happened. But, you know, they came up with a contest, so I'm not one to say that they should do anything that doesn't seem in their best interest to them. But I think it is a good thing for the suggestion box. And then the other thing is, the human dynamic, I just want to stress that one more time, the human dynamic of this, if it's you who has gotten this far in Survivor, you may think to yourself, wow, I am awesome. I am so skilled at this that it is my unbelievable Survivor football expertise that has gotten me to this point. And to some extent, it is you. But to what extent exactly is really what I'm getting at? I would argue the percentage is probably way less than most people imagine. I will tell you this, Jeffrey, if I ever got this far in Survivor, I'd be the first person to tell you. I was like, trust me, it's just, I just was the luckiest guy in the room who overcame the minefield. Did I map it out? Sure. Did I have it set up great? Sure. But did all the breaks go my way? Absolutely they did. So at this point, again, with this kind of money, have the humility. Chop it up, however you guys can figure it out. Maybe they can't figure it out, because maybe there's one guy who thinks it's him. We'll see. All right, NFL power rankings. Kelly and I usually do this at this point this week, but Jeffrey obviously in for Kelly. Plug it in. Power ranking. I tried to make that as awesome as possible. So I'll just say this again. No season has had power rankings as static as this year. Not even close. And what that speaks to is the sort of dreck, Yiddish, that exists right under the top tier of teams. And I don't think the drop-off to teams you don't trust has been as quick from the top as it has been this year. And Jeff, as you texted me last night, like, once you get past six, have at it. So here are my current top tens. Chiefs remain number one. Chiefs coming off their sort of ho-hum win over the Seahawks. Eagles, I'm not docking them for losing to the Cowboys. After all, I do have the Cowboys power ranked at number six, and it was Gardner Minshew. It was not Jalen Hurts. So the Eagles remain two. By the way, they should have probably won that game. Niners do ascend to number three. They have cracked the top three. The Niners, even with Brock Purdy, are just so legit, and they're doing it without Debo. They've been decimated with injuries themselves, and they just week after week, eight wins in a row. They're my number three. The Bills are number four. They do fall to number four, and I think it's justified. I think the Bills have had enough weeks in a row where they just kind of, you just worry about them. The game against the Dolphins, they probably shouldn't have won that. This week against the Bears, if you look at the box score, they dominated it, but they were, this was a close game for a long time against the Bears. I just don't know if they are as good as those other three teams just mentioned, the Chiefs, Eagles, and Niners. So the Bills end up at number four. The Bengals end up as number five. And again, not much movement here. The Bengals dominated the Patriots and then still had to have a miracle to win it. But they remain number five. And then the Cowboys. Now, here's an interesting question, Jeff. Are the Cowboys, of all of these teams, is the least debatable thing that the Cowboys are exactly the sixth best team?
Well, since you'll see in a second, we agree on select orders in this.
Yeah.
Dallas at six,
yes,
was the first thing I did.
So I'm glad I asked that, because yeah, that was my biggest conclusion of this. I was like, we can debate the order of things above that and things below that, but the Cowboys just almost unassailably are sixth best. They're not better. They're not worse. They're sixth. Now, here's where it gets funky. Because you can come up with your justification. By the way, the justification for the Cowboys being six is I still think in that defensive front, which, by the way, has disappeared a couple times here lately, but I still think at their best deserve to be six. And again, they did beat the Eagles. So I got the Dolphins still at seven. Now, there's a lot of, I can already hear the moans. Tua in concussion protocol, which is a massive thing here now, because, or is it massive, right? Do you think Teddy Bridgewater is a downgrade? And as bad as Tua can be, still hits that long ball pretty well with Waddle and Tyreek. So I got the Dolphins at seven because I think as long as they have that Waddle and Tyreek hack to the system, they're number seven. Chargers are eight, but good Lord, I don't trust them. Herbert at his best is awesome, but they're going to figure out a way to blow a game for sure. And I got the Jags at number nine because their body of work recently has been really solid. So I have them at nine. And then the Vikings, who are the most, what was it, when Aaron Schatz was on here a couple weeks ago, he said, I don't choose to call them a fraud, Gil. I choose to call them, quote, historically interesting, unquote. Which is to say that the 12-3 Minnesota Vikings have a point differential of plus five. Let me repeat that. The 12-3 Vikings are plus five. They are also 11-0 in one-score games. So they inhabit the number 10 position, which means that just outside the top 10 for me are teams like the Jets and the Ravens and that kind of ilk. Jeffrey, what do you got?
I have a very different number one team than
you. Wow, you do.
Yeah. I don't care that Zach Taylor's their coach.
Wow.
I have Cincinnati at number one. I think they are the most, with the injury concerns now for Philadelphia, because that Lane Johnson injury is a gigantic deal.
And historically, it always is when he's out.
Yes. And also the Maddox injury is a big deal. And that's not even mentioning the quarterback injury right now. Those injuries really scare me. And Philly was going to be number one with this until I saw that Maddox is done for the year, until I saw Lane Johnson could miss. If Lane Johnson missed the postseason, that's a whole different handicap with them.
I don't mind that justification, but you got the Bengals as opposed to, say, the Niners or someone else.
Look, 1 through 4 are extraordinarily tight for me. Like, this could very easily – San Francisco could hop to 1 after this week. That's how close it is between 1 through 4 for me. But I think Cincinnati is the most complete team in the league because that defense does not get the due for how good it is. I don't care what happened. I mean, Mac Jones got a Hail Mary touchdown on a deflected ball.
Don't remind me.
Like, I mean, it was idiocy what happened with New England getting back in that game. I think Cincinnati's the most complete team. I think they're going to prove it on Monday night. So I have them slightly above Kansas City, who I have slightly above Philadelphia, who I have slightly above San Francisco 1 through 4. I think there's a small gap with Buffalo to 5, then a small gap to Dallas at 6, and then basically I just threw these teams all up in the air, 7 through 15. Minnesota, even though I just solely on their luck and their record, and sometimes teams just have a golden horseshoe in their pocket all year long, I have Minnesota slightly ahead of the Chargers, who I do not trust. And by the way, Chargers have a negative point differential.
Yep.
That's not talked about at all, even though they clinched the playoff.
I mentioned yesterday, there's only 4 teams in the entire NFC that have a positive point differential, and the Vikings have +5.
Right. And the Vikings are an all-time anomaly with the close wins. Jacksonville, 9, positive point differential, playing very well with a young quarterback and a good coach. And then, look, I don't like Baltimore, but Tua going out for Miami, I think Teddy Bridgewater at this point of his career is done. And I think Miami is losing Week 18 to the Jets, and I think they're losing on Sunday to New England.
So you'd bet the no on them right now.
Yeah, I would. I think they're losing out. And Baltimore, this is all assuming Lamar is able to come back.
Yeah.
So they're 10.
Well, here's the thing, and this gets back to the original point about these power rankings this year. I could quibble about some of that, but I don't think I could even do that because it's generally what we all have, just with like a slot different one or two spots for all of these. But we have 9 of 10 matching. Kelly and I have had 10 of 10 matching for a few weeks. And that's the league this year. There are so few, like, how many teams can you actually trust? Let's use that word. I think the top 4 or 5. That's it. Not even Dallas. I don't trust Dak in Dallas. So it's really the top 5 to me. That's your National Football League and speaks to a lot of how difficult it is to bet at pre-flop for sure. JVT on the NBA, Steve Fezzik on the NFL. It's a numbers game at VSiN. That's coming up. The Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
VSiN is the gift that keeps on giving. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber for only $79. Get access to everything we do from now through the big dance. Sign up today and you'll also receive $20 to buy VSiN sports betting hats, shirts, mugs, and other great gear at our online store. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get access to our daily recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests, betting splits, and betting reports. It's a limited time offer, so sign up now for the perfect sports betting holiday gift and get VSiN Pro access through the end of March Madness at VSiN.com/subscribe. We get tweets at Beating the Book. This is from, I want to read this one. This is from Rick Zapsky. Rick Zapsky, who I think is, he thinks he's burning me on this. But I want to read this, Jeff. He says, start of the season, survive in advance is stupid strategy, and you have to play to win. End of the season, this is all luck. So I don't know if he's trying to burn me or not, but it's precisely that. It's precisely that it is so much luck that you do have to play to win. Because if you think your handicap is the most single important thing, the NFL is Meshuggah, right? It is so, you can be the best handicapper in the world, getting through Survivor is a Sisyphus pushing a rock up the hill kind of thing. A little Greek mythology for you there, Jeffrey. And so it is precisely the fact that there's so much luck involved in getting through a minefield that, yes, the most important thing is playing to win. So it's like that thought exercise I did with Jeff last year. Sorry to bring this up, Jeff, before Thanksgiving with the Raiders and the Cowboys. If you knew 99 people were playing the Cowboys, would you take the Raiders today? And Jeff at the time was like, no, I still wouldn't. You have to play that way. You have to be able to accept losing and crapping out if your win, if you have to be able to take that risk and emphasize decision-making that is going to increase your probability of winning in the moment. Forget about your survival throughout the whole thing. That's the key to it all, one would imagine, or I would imagine for sure, or I believe. Jason DeHart, you mean it wasn't my expertise that got me past the Colts with the Vikings as my selection last week when they were down 33-0? Blasphemy. K219. Could the three contract with the same proxy and agree with the picks for the next 2 weeks and just sit back and have no more contact with the proxy? Well, that's an interesting idea. Yeah. Mike Rouse, not dissimilar to World Series of Poker. Making it to the final table doesn't equate to you being a great poker player. Embrace the luck as part of the journey. Well said, Mike Rouse. Let's talk some NBA. We haven't done so yet today. I want to talk about the league that is filled with drama and soap opera-like storylines. We bring in Jonathan Von Tobel, our senior NBA analyst, and, of course, the host of Hardwood Handicappers, available where all podcasts are available. How you doing, JVT?
I'm good. I'm very good. A happy new year to you guys.
You too,
it's
man.
It's the best time of year, you know?
Yeah, kids are good. Family's good.
Yes, last checked, still breathing, still good. It's the number one goal of all parents, so I think I'm doing good so far.
Getting along with each other, little interaction with the kid, they're getting along okay?
They love each other to a sickening degree.
Beautiful.
So, yeah.
All right, well, wait a couple years, we'll see if that continues.
Yeah, right.
let me ask you, I know you're a big quantifiable numbers guy, but let me ask you a non-quantifiable one first. Ja Morant, asked by Malika Andrews, hey, who worries you? And he says the Boston Celtics. And then he continues one sentence too long, in my opinion, and goes, nobody in the West. And then the Warriors proceed to just absolutely destroy the Grizzlies the other day.
Yep.
Which, by the way, in retrospect, because I was saying it all day, I was like, oh, he should not have said that out loud. Because Draymond's just going to make sure he hears about it. Was that a massive mistake for him to do that?
I would say so, right? Especially for, by all intents and purposes, a Memphis team that really hasn't done much, right?
Like, right.
Congrats. You made it to the Western Conference semifinals, and that's all you've really accomplished up to this point. So I would say absolutely, like, it narratively puts a target on your back for all of these teams. And, you know, we all know this, but you left out the most important piece. Not only were you blasted on Christmas by Golden State, you're blasted on Christmas by Golden State without Steph Curry.
That's correct.
Yes. They absolutely demolished you. And it's funny because you actually read, like, hey, you know, the Memphis Grizzlies, they hate this Warriors team. They're going to come out. They're going to put their, you know, they want to stomp them out from the beginning of it. Well, if that was that effort, that's a little bit of a problem. And to throw some, like, I guess, you know, quantifiable numbers or, you know, some results in there too, you also, if you're Memphis, got to start winning some of these road games, because that's kind of been a low-key problem for Memphis this year, Gil. They are 7-10 away from home, 4-11-2 against the spread. They've not been the same team away from home that they have been in Memphis, and that has kind of reared its ugly head here a little bit lately. So you put a target on your back, and there's other teams that are starting to kind of like find their shape, right? The Los Angeles Clippers are very quietly starting to put things together. The Denver Nuggets are freaking awesome. And by the way, they went to Denver and got smoked there too a couple of nights ago. So I would say that was not the best thing to do if you were John Morant.
One more random thing before I ask you more specific ones. Christmas Day, I brought this up on Guessing Lines yesterday. Chrissy and I were going off on a tangent about something, and somehow this clicked in my brain. The Celtics-Bucks game, first half spread, Bucks plus 3. They were going back and forth on that number down the stretch. Then Jaylen Brown gets fouled on a 3. He misses all of them, and the Bucks bet gets home. Mm. Do you have any idea how seldomly that happens in the NBA, that someone misses all 3 of their free throws on a fouled 3? I would imagine it's like one a year.
Yeah, I was going to say it's got to be pretty infrequent and like somewhere around there. I don't know the actual number itself,
yeah.
But for that to happen in that situation too, right? And you get like these, I think it was actually for Milwaukee. Milwaukee's had some really good free throw luck. If you go back 2 weeks ago, they played Dallas on a Friday night and they won on a buzzer beater by Brooke Lopez. But the Mavericks down the stretch had missed, I think, 6 consecutive free throws. They had gotten to the line and eventually had missed so many yes. that they were allowed to win that game. So I would assume once, twice per year, maybe, where you miss all 3 on a 3-toe, unless it's like a big who just puts up a desperation shot for some reason and gets fouled. But I would say it's pretty infrequent.
Like I said, like years ago, decades ago, it happened all the time in the NBA. There was a time in the NBA where you got 3 to make 2, and those big men used to miss them all the time. But this modern age, not at all. So you probably know where I'm going here. Well, maybe you don't, but we've got to. The Brooklyn Nets, we love to kick them when they're down. But, man, they won 9 in a row. They're 22-12. They're two games out of being the best team in the Eastern Conference right now and in the entire National Basketball Association. Like, how serious is this? I mean, they're playing great right now. Everything's great. But, like, have we gotten to the point now where we should be thinking about them as, oh, they could do this? This might actually be the year where they do this, what we thought was going to happen last year.
I say yes. Like, I think this is legitimate for Brooklyn. And, Gil, it's not just this nine-game sample size. Let's go back to the day after Steve Nash got fired. Since that day, the Brooklyn Nets are 20-7. They are third in non-garbage time net rating and plus 6.5, outscoring opponents by 6.5 points per 100 possessions. Here's the kicker. They're fourth in offense since then. Not surprising, right? They got Kevin Durant. They've got Kyrie Irving. They got a bunch of shooters. It's awesome. They're seventh in defense since Steve Nash got fired.
Wow.
This team is playing some really good basketball. Kevin Durant is playing some of the better defensive basketball of his career. Ben Simmons looks more like Ben Simmons every single day. Like, I think this is legit, Gil. I think this team is finally starting to kind of get together. It seems like a much better environment, right? Non-basketball things related. Like, everybody there is kind of simpatico at this point right now. That could blow up at any point, but it seems like a pretty cool vibe. Kyrie Irving's quiet, which is generally a good thing for that team. And Kevin Durant is playing at an MVP level in the midst of what seems to be a kind of an FU season to everybody else for Kevin Durant. I would say this is legitimate. If you're going to play at this level defensively and you have one of the best scorers in the NBA and best players in the NBA on your side and Kevin Durant, why would this team not be able to win a best of seven against Philly or Boston or Brooklyn or Milwaukee? I think this is a legitimate team that's going to be a threat in the Eastern Conference, you know, if they maintain the off-court vibes that they have, which is relatively positive at this point right now.
What's a better bet here? Brooklyn future 6-1 to win it all, 12-1 to win the conference, or say a Kevin Durant MVP flyer?
I would say Brooklyn, because I wonder what voters are going to do with Kevin Durant, right, with the summer. Because we saw, remember 2 years ago when I was all hopped up on the James Harden MVP train, right? Mm-hmm. His first year in Brooklyn. And there were a lot of people, voters, who were like, I'm never voting for him. I didn't like the way he did what he did in Houston. I'm not going to give him a vote. And I wonder how many people feel that way about Kevin Durant with what happened to the offseason demanding a trade, essentially forcing Steve Nash out and not being happy with the way that he operated. So I would say, right, team success and everything like that, I'd be more comfortable with that because there is no added factor in of just stodgy people just being like, I'm not giving that guy his vote, even though he deserves it. So I think I'd rather invest in team success as opposed to Kevin Durant's success. Although he should be up there, like top three, given what he's been doing. He's been incredible.
Yeah, it's a good point. Human beings, once again, do vote on these awards, and their biases will be in play. Maybe more so in the NBA than anything else. Big NBA slate. We only got a minute. What do you like?
So I've got one bet so far. I bet overnight the Lakers catching 4.5. We're down to like 3.5, 3 here against Orlando. You know, I always look for these little things, right? Orlando guys, over the last couple, I think they've covered 10 straight now at this point, the Orlando Magic. But you always look for reasons why. And their defense has been absolutely incredible. But the thing that has stuck out, they're getting insanely lucky. The Orlando Magic hard during this run. Opponents are shooting just 31.6 from beyond the arc, 31.6%. On wide open threes, they're shooting just under 30%. This defensive regression is probably coming for the Orlando Magic. And now you get the Lakers who have the size to match up with them. They're good in transition. They're going to be able to take advantage of this. I think that now we're starting to get to the point where Orlando, when we're talking 4.5, was probably getting overpriced by the market on the overnight line. So I took that 4.5 with the Los Angeles Lakers. Think they're in a good spot to kind of bounce back after a rough second half on Christmas Day.
JVT, you're the Orlando Magic Scrooge. Winners of 8 of 9. But at least you have the numbers to back it up what you're saying. You're not just doing it to do it. Thank you.
Still win the division for Kelly and
all right, we'll take that. Yeah. That's all we need.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, John. Jonathan Von Tobel, everybody. At me, JVT, on Twitter. Again, Hardwood Handicappers. The name of the podcast. Steve Fezzik, only back-to-back Super Contest winner in studio next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers game proudly brought to you by BetMGM Nevada, the king of sports books. Don't forget, unleashing the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets. It's never been easier to join the action on the new BetMGM app featuring a fresh redesign with improved features and quicker navigation. And if you're planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM resorts located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards, sports betting's premier loyalty program, including exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks. When you wager with BetMGM, sign up with BetMGM or log in today to take advantage of BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Please gamble responsibly. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. It's Gil Alexander joining us in studio. It's the beauty of doing a numbers game here at the South Point Hotel Casino on the tip of the strip. Folks can just roll on through, and we always appreciate it, especially when it's a gentleman like the only back-to-back Super Contest winner of all time, Steve Fezzik, in the house. How you doing, man?
I'm excellent. On the way to the strip, South Point is right here, so boom, right off I-15.
The strip is super crowded. It's unbelievable how many people.
What a change. 20 years ago, after the rodeo left town, shoot a cannon in there, don't hit anyone. Now it's Starbucks 30 deep. Yes.
It's really true. 20, not even 20. Like, I would go 10 even. 10, 15, where and I used to basically live at the Hard Rock, and there was a convention of a certain kind at that time. But besides that convention in December, you could see the tumbleweed through the hotel. You could imagine it. And now it is just like, I couldn't wait to get out of that casino last night. I'm like, get me out of here. Get me into the air. So just be aware of that.
And the South Point is always busy. You know why? Because they do everything right in terms of, like, you look, like, it doesn't matter, cowboys or no rodeo, $25 tables packed. Yeah. Good food, $1.25 hot dog. Michael's one of the best steakhouses. There's something for everyone. Multiple bowling alleys. It is a great staycation spot.
Multiplex movie theater. Mm-hmm. Free parking for everybody. Ample parking. It's our South Point promotion. All right. I'm glad you're here. First of all, I have a couple things I want to talk to you about. One, because we text with Wishnev, by the way, Todd Wishnev landing in Las Vegas today. Not landing, driving via automobile, and we'll be in Las Vegas. So we're all excited about that. But we're in a text chain, and you brought up something that I thought was very interesting, which is a point that I've tried to make for years on this show, specifically through first inning bets in baseball, yes, no, will a run be scored or not? And just basically sort of emphasizing how, you know, some of the non-mainstream markets, the less talked about markets, are the ones that bettors really ought to try to exploit. There's one in football that you do very well.
Yeah, well, I love the Grand Salami.
Yes.
All right,
so which by the way, we mentioned you had last week and came through with flying colors.
Yes, and so it's a great example of pick a few specialized props and be better at it than anybody else. Because the bookmaker, let's face it, they're taking 10 dimes on minimum at NFL games, and they're betting 5,000 in college football. The props 500, 1,000. It's not a priority, so they'll never learn to price all this stuff right, and they'll just let the bettors fix it. So what Gil did for years, you know, he had his secret sauce, and I don't want to give away the secret sauce, half Thousand Island, half ketchup, but the bottom line is National League games are much more likely to have a score in the first inning than American League games, because if all things being equal, if you have a total of 7, the pitchers aren't going to be able to hit, and so you're not going to score in the second inning and the fourth inning in the National League, but you will in the American League, so the distribution of scoring is higher in the National League, so the yeses in the National League for years were better. I think I can give that away now that the designated hitter rule changed.
That was part of it. Yes,
part of it.
That was part of it.
Not the whole thing.
But now there's something you do. Now this comes up when so Super Bowl week, we all talk about the props for the Super Bowl. And one of them that I have bet, and I want to say it was a New England Super Bowl, and I can't remember which one it was, but it's about who will receive the opening kickoff. That's a market that is very much of the same variety, which is if you can know it better than the bookmaker, there's an edge there.
Yeah, so for years, what happened is that the majority of teams, when they won the kickoff, want the ball, right? Yeah. It just makes sense. Well, it turns out, Belichick figured it out first, that there's a slight advantage to be had to take the ball, to defer and take the ball in the third quarter. And the reason being is that the defense is a little more tired. Scoring's a little higher in the third quarter than it is in the first quarter. So you want the ball, all things being equal, unless there's massive weather changes, to start the third quarter. So word spread and coaches started to defer. Copy Belichick, even if you don't understand why, just defer. So there hit a point where some teams were deferring all the time, and some, like Sean Payton, were always taking the ball. So when the Saints played New England, every now and then you'd see a book that would have a prop. Who's going to receive the opening kickoff? And it was a two-headed coin. You literally had the best bet in the casino. You knew Sean Payton and the Saints were going to get the ball. And what drove me bananas is every year in the Super Bowl, they'd be like, bet the coin toss. All right, I know Chris would make fun of, he'd make it minus 120, yes, no, some on heads, tails, because it was so stupid to bet the coin toss, and even more people would bet it. But what infuriated me about the media is that the coin toss, in many cases, was the best bet of them all to make, not on the coin toss, but who indeed was going to get the ball first,
right,
which was predetermined in some cases.
So do you keep your own sort of data on that? Do you follow? Do you track that?
My friend, the Eight of Clubs, and that's his nickname, and he uses the Eight of Clubs, Leon, does it because he wants – I'm sorry, I blew
also,
his cover
also
right now.
The card I selected with O's the Mentalist, coincidentally.
It's the least descriptive card on the deck. If you're trying to hide under the radar, the Eight of Clubs is like it's the least flashy suit and middle – number, so it's the least likely maybe, card you would ever select.
Maybe that's how he knew.
It's the Eight of Clubs, but what he always tracks this, and largely this became a futile exercise because now every NFL team defers, and to this day the announcers who are 20 years behind, you know, they always want to kick the field goal, they always want to punt, they don't want to go for it, and whenever they say, very interesting that the Bengals deferred after winning the contest. It's like everybody defers. Everyone knows this.
I would love to watch a football game with you just to see your outrage at stuff like that. Like, I bet you go nuts.
And the college team. They're going to try a 53-yarder here on fourth and four, and it's never correct.
One last thing about the receiving the kickoff. How widespread is that regular season from game to game now? Like, how many books offer that?
Oh, very rare.
Yeah.
Very rare. But come the playoffs and then certainly the Super Bowl, everybody offers it, you know, during the Super Bowl. You know, but there are derivatives. People are going to get mad at me. I'll say it. You know, you can pass post the kickoff. So you got the coin toss. You know, you've got someone at the stadium. He's like, Steelers are going to get the ball first. Bad example because they are a low total team. So a better example is if you have a total like 51 and you get the ball first, all right, you can't bet that they're going to get the kickoff, but you can bet they'll score first, win the first quarter, bet the other guys to win the third quarter. You see where I'm going. I'm rather busy when the games are kicking off.
Boys and girls, that's a very good tip, but I won't like linger on it just for fear of people getting mad about it. All right, so one more thing I want to ask you about, because we've gotten to quote-unquote must-win season, if you will, within the NFL season. My buddy Dr. Bob, for many years, his little catchphrase with that was always, Gil, if a team's in a must-win situation, that must mean they're not very good. In other words, must-win situation, they must not be that good. He probably tells me I word it differently, but you get the idea. You bring something extra to the table on this, which I think is interesting because, you push back a little bit about that because there is a motivation issue, but you also delineate between what time of the week. So explain that to us.
Sure. So I actually think must win is a favorable thing for a team, but it's probably only worth like a quarter point. Teams are trying hard all the time. All
right? Players on the field are trying.
And you do have the added pressure, which could get to you. But the reason these teams do so atrocious against the spread is not that they play worse in must wins. It's that the point spread tax associated with them is onerous. So word gets, Green Bay needs to win this game.
Built in, as we say.
Exactly. But it's not built in by the odds maker. The odds makers set their lines based upon, usually, they don't have time to go through all this. They're like, I make the game, like when Chris says, I make the game. He takes a look at his power ratings. And then he lets the bettors massage them. So teams like Detroit, like the Giants, like the Packers, inevitably are going to get bet this week because of the must win. Well, last night I bet the Giants. I laid 3.5, reduced big, right after Indianapolis looked as bad as any team you'll ever see. Well, now the Giants are -5.5. You know what? And Bob will be correct, and he'll probably come in and say, got to fade the Giants when the line gets to 6.5. Doesn't mean you can't lay 3.5 early in the week.
So that's the thing. So it's, built in only to the extent that once it's massaged, not at the outset. So bet it early. By the time it gets to game time, then the motivational must-win factor isn't, in if anything, is the reverse of that.
Exactly. By example, I bet Detroit -5. I gave my clients Detroit -5.5. They're playing the Bears. And I might add there's a little sneaky – it's in some ways it's becoming a must-lose game for Chicago because those Houston Texans suddenly have 2.5 wins and the Bears have 3. If I was the owner – I would be very upset if I'm with my team if I found a way to win these next 2 weeks.
Steve, you're awesome. Appreciate it, man. This is your pro tip, by the way. Why don't we just make it a Fezzik pro tip of the hour, shall we? Pro tip, focus on non-mainstream props and beat the books at them. First thing we were talking about, example, yes-no run in the first inning in Major League Baseball. Grand Salamis, which Steve gave us a winner on last week. And as we spoke about, returning who will receive the opening kickoff. That's a prop. All of these searchable at VSiN.com. We do at least 20 a day, one every hour on the network. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. Lombardi Line is next. Enjoy from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.